This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work, Policy, and Practice at the University of Chicago. The master's program in social work offers a one-year advanced standing option for students with a bachelor's degree in social work that builds on prior training and connects students with expert faculty and five specialized pathways. Apply by February 1st at crownschool.uchicago.edu/socialwork. Inspire change. Shape the future. This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Poetry Foundation, with a reminder that Chicago is the pulse of poetry. Visit the Poetry Foundation on the corner of Superior and Dearborn to explore their library of 40,000 books, attend public events, and view Frente a la Vida, Facing Life, a striking multidisciplinary art exhibition by Chicago artist Victoria Martinez. Learn more at poetryfoundation.org.
I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. During the pandemic, many venues for dance, theater, and music were able to stay afloat because of emergency federal assistance. But now that funding has dried up, leaving many parched for dollars and having to make some tough decisions. The Looking Glass Theater in the heart of the Magmile recently announced massive staffing cuts and that they're pausing productions till spring of 2024. Midnight Circus, a troupe of acrobats and trapeze artists, also recently announced they're shortening their annual city tour due to production costs. And they're not alone. So to go deeper into that story, we talked to several organizations that have had to cut costs. Our first guest is Julie Jenkins. She's artistic director of Midnight Circus. We're going to pick up the conversation where Julie gave some background on her theater troupe.
Well, Midnight Circus is a group of acrobats, actors, dancers, singers, musicians, and one rescued pit bull that are committed to breaking down the barriers that separate our art forms and to building community through the art of circus in neighborhoods all across Chicago.
Wow. And the circus has toured parks across the city for years.
You're
putting on these amazing shows. Wow, that's a long time. This year, though, you announced, as I mentioned, you're scaling back. You won't be able to tour this year.
That's right.
What went into that decision? What exactly happened?
So the interesting thing about Midnight Circus in the parks is that we actually don't have a hard time with our audiences. Like our audiences last year on our tour, we played in to over 15,000 people in our fall tour of Circus in the Parks.
Wow, that's a lot.
In Wells Park alone, we had over 5,000 people in one weekend.
So people are coming out.
People are coming out. Our issue really is that when we started Midnight Circus in the Parks, we recognized that there was great disparity in access to the arts. And we thought in order to change that, we would bring high-level arts to neighborhoods all across the city. So our little circus tent became a portable theater that we would bring into the community. And we would work with community partners and build our brand that way. Tickets were always made accessible and affordable. They ranged from $5 to $20. And we played to over 20,000 people annually before the pandemic. Mm. When the pandemic hit, when all organizations were forced to stop, we were reached out to by communities all across Chicago saying, we're hurting. Is there anything you could do? So we shed our big top and we went into the open air and we worked with the Department of Public Health and the Chicago Park District and we devised a safe tour and continued our operations free.
How are you feeling about that change?
Well, the change was a temporary fix in order to continue to build community, which is part of our mission. But we knew that we would have to return to the model of charging ticket prices that was not supported by the Night Out in the Parks initiative. They want to offer free programming. And so we sort of got stuck for a couple of years between 2020 and this year, where one end of our funding revenue, which was granting from them, got cut. And we weren't allowed to go back to a model that worked, which was charging ticket prices. Mm-hmm. So for a couple of years, we were able to write grants and grant our way out of it through Shuttered Venue Grant and R3 Grant and other rescue type grants. But eventually, when you choke off funding sources from both ends, we're not going to be able to operate. So this year when that happened and we realized that, okay, the corporate sponsor ship is down, individual donorship is down, mm-hmm. And we were not able to write the grants out of it, we knew that we needed to go back to a ticketed price. And the park said no, so we're going to do one park. We're doing a Hail Mary.
Yeah. we'll talk more about some of those pivots.
Sure.
You're listening to Reset. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. If you're just tuning in, we're discussing how arts organizations are funded with Julie Jenkins, who's artistic director of Midnight Circus. We'll add some more voices to the conversation now. First up, Claire Rice, who's executive director of Arts Alliance Illinois. That's a nonprofit that fights for arts resources and policies benefiting the arts. And she joins us now. Hey, Claire, welcome back.
Hi, Sasha. Thanks for having me.
And David McDermott is here, executive director of Hubbard Street Dance. Hey, David.
Hey, it's great to be here.
Claire, how familiar does that sound? I know you've both been listening along to my conversation with Julie.
Yeah.
How familiar is that an arts organization has to cut programming or just scale things way back?
Yeah, I mean, it's an all too familiar refrain in this moment. As you said at the outset, we're still rebuilding. And we always knew, as we said, when we were receiving those large scale relief grants from the government for our sector throughout the pandemic, we've said, you know, first to close, last to reopen. Mm-hmm. And that is unfortunately still a real refrain for many in our sector. Not all, but many.
Yeah, last time we had you on the program, you were mentioning how theaters and arts organizations were facing the end of significant federal, state, and local support, and that their current business model needs to face some significant changes in order to survive.
Exactly. I mean, I think the pandemic really, I think as we discussed before, you know, exacerbated some of the challenges to the business model for the performing arts that we saw even well before the pandemic, the end of subscriptions, increased costs. This is just system-wide what we're facing in this moment.
Yeah.
And the appetite for relief from the government has dried up. But I will say that over the course of the last 3 years and our relationships, you know, particularly with our city and our state governments, we have opportunity, and there has been wildly more investment in the arts and creative community. We need them to continue to push through, and it will not be at the same scale as the large-scale relief program, but we have established some new baselines, particularly in the city of Chicago, for direct support of our sector, and we need to keep pushing there.
Yeah. David, Hubbard Street Dance has been wowing audiences for nearly 50 years. Did you feel that you had to adjust programming post-pandemic differently than you have in the past?
We brought in a new artistic director during the course of the pandemic, so our programming shifted naturally.
Yeah.
I don't think that I think Linda Denise Fisher-Harella, our new artistic director, her vision is a much more accessible vision to a broader swath of Chicagoans. I don't think that was pandemic related. I think that's just Linda D's
new vision.
Yeah.
New person, new vision. So where has Hubbard had to make cuts?
Yeah. So Hubbard Street, I think, like many performing arts organizations across the country, is seeing audiences down about 20%, which has been tough on us. I think we are also seeing reductions in corporate funding, just like Midnight Circus. We're seeing foundation funding across the industry down about 20%. Individual giving is flat, which with inflation at 9% really feels like a cut. And so Hubbard Street, from pre-pandemic times, we've reduced our administrative staff by about 50%. So we've made and that's just kind of the new reality for Hubbard Street. We're really lucky to have been able to keep artistic funding flat. Mm-hmm. And we just entered into a new 5-year contract with our dancers, which is great.
Yeah.
Ensuring 52-week contracts.
But losing so many people, though,
yeah,
right?
Losing half of our administrative
I know what
staff.
It's like here on Team Reset when one person's out.
Yeah, it's
much less losing 50% of my team.
Yes, everybody wears multiple hats these days. And I think we are lucky to all be in love with our art. And so it's not easy to do, but we do what has to be done.
Julie, you're nodding.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds familiar. I mean, we're a small but mighty organization. We were able to keep our employees through some of the rescue funding, but we didn't have as big of a staff, obviously. It's a tough environment out there. I think there's a way forward. I like to believe there's a way forward. I think that it starts in communities. It starts in building active arts participants within communities. We've been doing that since 2007, getting community buy-in, where that there's an ownership. You're not expecting people to pay for parking and go out to dinner and buy an expensive ticket price. You're bringing arts and culture into their neighborhoods, and they're actually, Midnight Circus has given back close to $2 million to the community groups that have partnered with us. And those funds have gone to rebuild park play lots in 5 parks, a nature walk in 1 park, a renovation of a field house, after school programming, tumbling mats. I mean, the arts can change a neighborhood. The arts have a unique power to transform a community. And and in order to do that, we need to bring high level arts to communities. The number of times we heard, you know, just do a scaled back production and bring it into the community. No, we're going to bring the full thing.
Yeah. Claire, what are some organizations, you know, Chicago-wide that you love that had to close their doors because of the pandemic? And what was the common theme there, the common thread?
Yeah, I mean, I think we haven't seen, because of the relief funds that all of us working together as advocates and partners were able to secure, we haven't seen widespread closures. Handfuls, yes. But I think folks have been hanging on. I think we sort of kicked the can down the road a bit on that. And what we might see, you know, as Julie's referencing, is this sort of scale back closure cycle coming up in, you know, 23 and 24, because folks have said to us, you know, we've mainly got our budget secure through this year or through next year, and then we hit, you know, what they're describing as a fiscal cliff. So I think we're likely to see some more of those scale backs and closures coming up, and this is why it's all the more important for us to remember, particularly also, as Julie was mentioning, you know, the arts are part of our civic fabric, but they're problem solvers, right? Mm-hmm. So what Julie was talking about was not just art making, but community development, economic development, engagement in civic and social issues well beyond our stages or our galleries. So I think the city is really starting to understand the role that arts and culture can play in that, in a much broader civic narrative, and we need that investment to follow.
The changes that you talked about at Hubbard Street Dance, David, I mean, do you feel that any of it affected production level with shows?
No, I don't think that it has. I think, you know, Hubbard Street, just like Claire and Julie were talking about, has been, we're creatives at heart, and so we've been able to pivot, and I don't think that it has affected the level of our production. We have 14 really amazing world-class dancers. We have choreographers who are excited to come to Chicago to work with our dancers, to work with our new artistic director, Linda Denise. I think we've also done there's been a number of initiatives that we've pivoted on that have ended up being beneficial. You know, we're in a an adaptive reuse space in the Water Tower Place Mall now. So we've been able to control costs there and get in front of new audiences. We're nationalizing our board, which has been really cool. Before the pandemic, I never would have thought we would have had a national board. But then with the advent of Zoom, we now have a third of our board is across the country. They're in New York, they're in LA, they're in Florida, they're in Colorado. And so we've been able to really find as much as possible some silver linings in the pandemic.
And Claire, so that we are clear, how are arts organizations typically funded? Is there a common model?
Well, you know, I think it's the nonprofit arts model is obviously different than some of our for-profit creative colleagues who are based on pretty much exclusively earned revenue. Mm-hmm. But for the nonprofit side of the fence, it's a mix, right? Earned revenue is a huge piece of the puzzle, and that's where most folks have taken the biggest hit. As Dave mentioned, combination of individual giving, grants, it's a portfolio of funding that is a kind of a delicate mix. And when you lose or take a hit in one piece of that, the puzzle doesn't come together. And for organizations like Julie's and many others that have been reliant on free programming, the earned revenue piece has not been a part of the mix for a couple of years. And so the grants and individual giving piece has to support the entirety of the program.
Yeah, talk more about that, Julie, the challenges of relying on grants.
Yeah, so that's why we never did. That's why we were a sustainable, very strong organization prior to the pandemic. We were always charging a ticket price and receiving grants. In fact, when Night Out in the Parks started, which is the umbrella that we were rolled under in 2013, and they pride themselves in offering arts and culture in neighborhoods all across the city, and that's true. However, when the pandemic happened, they formalized that it had to be free. It was free. They wanted it to be free programming before. We had many conversations when they would say, you guys need to offer your show for free. And I would say, you're creating an atmosphere of arts welfare. You should be encouraging every arts organization to go into communities and charge an affordable ticket price, $5. Communities want that. They want to buy in. It's saying to communities, this is a value. This is not free programming. This is of value.
It's an arts welfare.
And that's, I said that in a park district meeting once. I said, because eventually your funding is going to dry up, and then arts organizations are going to have their hand out. And that's essentially what happened in the pandemic with us. Mm-hmm. Was we offered it free, but we never intended to stay free. They wouldn't allow us to go back to charging a ticket price.
Interesting.
So that we could sustain ourselves. So it's going to be interesting this year. We're doing one weekend. It's a Hail Mary. I think there's a lot of support. We are charging a ticket price. It's going to be $20 a ticket. We like to think it's the best, most affordable show in town. Our artists come from all over the world. Many of them you can see at Cirque du Soleil for $200. You'll see for us for $20. So hoping that we can continue for future generations. I think it's an important, if arts and culture are going to continue, we need to hit it at a community level and at an education level too.
Yeah.
We need to educate audiences. If the model's shifting, we need to bring participants, arts and community participants along with us.
Yeah, and I want to note something that we sort of touched on earlier, but I mean, Crane Chicago Business is reporting some of Chicago's largest foundations, including some big names that are funding arts organizations across the city, like the Harris Theater, that they've seen a drop in assets since last year. Huh. Claire, how much do arts organizations depend on their funding?
Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely critical. I think a lot of organizations are having conversations right now about the balance of commercially viable work and, you know, work that audiences will pay for versus potentially new work, lesser known work, more challenging work. That has been sort of the basis of the nonprofit performing arts business model, that The new work, maybe the less kind of commercially viable or successful work, mm-hmm. has had to be underwritten by grants and individual donor support. So I think that's the real rub here, is if performing arts organizations are really forced to move toward more commercially viable programming. You know, there's something to be said for that. It's appealing to audiences. Audiences are excited about it. They're coming to these performances and these shows. That's real and not necessarily a bad thing. But at the same time, we need to think about the pipeline of, you know, shows like Hamilton, which started in a nonprofit context, and who knew whether it was going to be successful or not successful. And those types of R&D moments need to happen in a subsidized framework. You know, the new work needs to be tested to test whether it's commercially viable. And that's the danger here if we move toward exclusively commercial propositions.
That scares me, because I see I know that not a lot of organizations have closed, but on our level, the game changers, the ones that are doing more experimental work, we've seen our comrades close at record amounts. We have to nurture the game changers.
What's something I'm curious about, David, is whether there's a sense of community when it comes to this funding, or can a perceived scarcity of funding make it feel as though you're all competing?
I think it's always a little bit of both. There's nothing like commiserating with my fellow executive directors, CEOs of arts organizations, and I feel really supported by folks like Claire and other folks in the community, and Julie, we've just met today, but I already know that we're going to be friends, so that feels great. But I think our Harbor Street's season 46 theme is abundance, and so we're trying to be in that abundance mindset. But I think when the industry is in such a rough spot, it's always tempting to look at it as a scarcity mindset.
So I want to be blunt, and it really does sort of piggyback off of some sentiments that we were talking about earlier in the program. There might be folks who are listening to us right now and wondering, why should we support arts organizations? So I do want to hear from all of you on this, and I'll start with you, Julie. Talk about the benefit the community gets from the arts.
Yeah, I mean, well, the arts have the power, and Claire mentioned this, to address social issues. You know, when we toured, we were the only company performing during a shutdown pandemic in 2020. And we saw the transformative power of the arts. We had aldermen from neighborhoods on the South Side, the West Side, call and say, can you come to our neighborhood? We need a shot of joy. We need to remember why we're here, what we care about as a community. And so we brought the circus there, and it can change people's lives. We've seen it. So I think people should care, because what we do at Midnight Circus is we go into a community and we bring the community together within their neighborhood park. If people come together in their park, if good things are happening in a park, bad things aren't happening in a park. If you gather with your neighbors to watch an arts event in your park, you're getting to know your neighbors, and you're more likely to care about your neighbors and your neighborhood. So we've seen it firsthand. We've seen over the 17 years we've been bringing our company into neighborhoods all across Chicago, we've seen organizations, we've seen neighborhoods change. We've seen organizations, community groups form from presenting the circus, just people that wanted to make their community better come together. And now it's, you know, the Ogden Park Advisory Council. Yeah. They didn't have an advisory council prior to presenting the circus. So we know it can change lives.
Yeah, it's transformative. What do you think, David?
I mean, obviously, I think that the communal experience that Julie is talking about is really important to bring communities together. You know, there's nothing like sitting in the audience of a Midnight Circus or Hubbard Street or any of the great arts organizations in Chicago and having that communal experience of awe. It just really changes who you are, and it can be a deeply spiritual experience. I think that for Hubbard Street, I think on top of that is, you know, contemporary dance is dance of now. And so that's always changing. And one of Hubbard Street's, I think, biggest achievements is allowing people to see themselves and think about themselves in new ways. So this season, we had, I think a lot of people think of dance and they think of the Nutcracker, which, you know, I like the Nutcracker.
Yeah.
The Nutcracker is cool.
The Nutcracker is cool.
But there's a lot of other dance out there. And because Hubbard Street is dance of now, contemporary dance, we have an ability to showcase new forms of dance that have a deeper connection with our communities, a deeper connection. For instance, this season we premiered a piece called Dear Frankie by a choreographed by Rennie Harris, who's out of New York, but the piece was inspired by Frankie Knuckles. And I can't tell you how many people came to the show and walked out and said, oh my gosh, it was so moving to see these movements that I did at the warehouse, you know, 30, 40 years ago on stage, presented in a way that is uplifting the art form to, you know, to the stage. And I think that really changes people, how people feel about themselves, how people feel about their communities. And I think that's really, you know, a magical part of the arts, is being able to elevate what some people think of as everyday experiences to a stage that's producing the highest quality art in the world.
Claire, novelist and playwright Monica Byrne wrote in the Washington Post about this same topic today. She says that the theater in its current form shouldn't be rescued. She goes on to write, quote, "For theater as we know it to have any future at all, a new economic model must take its place, founded on a simple principle: fund artists directly. Then let the artists produce their own work, rent their own venues, and pay their own collaborators," end quote. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think our model in this business has been for probably, you know, as long as I've been working in this field, which is a couple of decades, and much longer than that, focused around funding organizations and perhaps not as focused on funding individual artists and creative workers. That is changing, and I think it's not an either-or proposition. It needs to be a both-and proposition. But I do agree that increasing focus on direct support for artists and creatives, which happens, frankly, you know, both at our city and our state in terms of government funding, and we're continuing to encourage, you know, private funders to follow that lead in terms of direct investment in individual artists and creatives. And that's pretty unique in the country, that both our state arts council and our city does direct funding to individual artists and creatives. We need to keep that. We need to increase it. And, you know, artists and creatives are never going to stop making and creating. Organizations may evolve, change, morph over time, but you're not going to stop that creative impulse. So I'm in agreement with the article today.
Yeah.
And again, not to stop funding organizations, but to truly increase and invest in individual creatives is a great proposition.
So let's stay with that thought. Yeah. What's your ideal then in how you want to see arts organizations funded, Claire? Like, how do we shift our thinking to see investment in the arts as an economic engine for the city?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think we have, as I think we've talked about before, Sasha, everyone has a role to play in this puzzle and in the evolution and sustainability of our cultural institutions and our individual creative workers. We need our city to continue to value the role of artists and creatives, not just as, you know, elite or separate from our civic culture, but really integral civic problem solvers, workers, professionals. Our city needs to continue to invest in both individual creative workers and organizations. Mm-hmm. We need our private philanthropy and our corporations, where we've seen a lot of corporations backing away from arts and culture funding. We need those corporations to realize that if they're wanting to invest in economic development, in closing racial wealth gaps, in violence prevention, arts and culture has a role to play in all of these other CSR, corporate social responsibility issues that face our city.
Yeah.
And so we need audiences to continue participating. So, and we need, I'll say, and have said, we'll say again, like Dave and Julie, our cultural leaders to continue evolving and innovating on the business model. So there's everyone's got their part to play.
So leave us with this, Julie, because we're just about out of time. I mean, what more do you want to see local and state officials do here to support?
I mean, we've had a lot of support from our state officials and our local officials. I think I'd love them to keep advocating. I do want to say, to add on to what Claire said of a path forward, we also need to see arts organizations contribute to the communities that they play. Because it's by doing that that we create audiences, our audience base. If there's no give back to the community, if there's no meeting
where's the
them,
incentive for folks to come out
exactly.
And support. Yeah, and it's a cycle. Anything you want to add, David, to support from local or state officials? Anything else you'd like to see?
I always want to see more money, but I want to say thank you to Claire.
The dollars.
Claire for her advocacy, and I want to call out Commissioner Harkey for her advocacy on behalf of arts organizations around the state. So.
Yeah. We'll leave it there. David McDermott is the executive director of Hubbard Street Dance, Julie Jenkins, artistic director of Midnight Circus, and Claire Rice, executive director of Arts Alliance Illinois. Thank you all so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This episode of Reset was produced by Brenda Ruiz. It was edited by Meha Ahmed and Andrew Merriweather. Get Reset in your inbox Monday through Friday by subscribing to our newsletter. You'll get the biggest headlines, see what we're covering on the show, and some recommendations for what to see and do in Chicago. Just go to wbez.org/resetnews to sign up. That'll do it for Reset. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. We'll talk to you this afternoon.